The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the Dorman Report. This is Mike Consul with Jeff Dorman. Jeff, the Institute for Real Estate Operating Companies is in year number, I believe, number three. You just had...
That's correct. Number three. We're heading into number three now.
Okay, so we're heading into year number three. You just had a meeting again in Park City, Utah. Talk about the event. Talk about the organization. I know you always like to give background for the new listeners who are not necessarily familiar with the organization, why we hold the event. And, of course, I'm also interested in how you see the organization, a relatively young organization, developing.
Yeah. Well, it's basically a club of like-minded investors, investment managers, and real estate operating companies that are looking to form more profitable joint ventures. That's the whole idea behind it. And not all investors will do joint ventures with operators. Matter of fact, really only a handful of them will. And not all investment managers will do joint ventures with operating companies. Many investors, investment managers will do, tend to invest in more kind of core and sometimes value-added property where their own people are involved in handling all aspects from acquisition through asset management through disposition, and they contract with third parties, but those third parties aren't partners. In a real estate operating company partnership, the real estate operating company is actually a partner in the deal, typically has skin in the game, and the investment manager or investors relying on their local market access and their, you know, boots on the ground, fingernails dirty operating skills to implement the agreed upon investment strategy.
So that's the advantage to that, is that right? The advantage of using operating companies is you have the boots on the ground and the experience there. So what? Where's the reticence come from? What's the downside?
There's no downside. I think some investment managers are concerned that a number of the larger investors like CalPERS, CalSTRS, and some others, Utah, Texas Teachers, are increasingly trying to increase the number of real estate operating partnerships they have, and their worry is that it's going to disintermediate the role of the investment manager. But the reality of it is, it's only a handful of funds that are large enough to be able to have large enough staffs to be able to handle these kind of relationships. And even those that do really have a bandwidth problem. Even CalSTRS and CalPERS have a bandwidth problem. There's only so many hours in the day and only so many staff that they can hire internally to manage these programs. And so to a certain extent, they really have to rely still on investment manager capabilities to be able to execute their strategies across the board. Doesn't mean that they won't continue to do some direct deals without virtue of investment managers, but I think they'll also continue to use oversight advisors, and most of these companies do use oversight advisors from time to time. So, the advantage of working with operators, particularly in the value creation phase of real estate investing, makes a lot of sense. But it's not the only way to do it, and certainly there are people that do very good work not doing joint ventures. So we're not advocating this as an alternative to the old model, because it's always been done. This is not a new trend. Investment managers have been forming partnerships with real estate operators since the beginning of time. It's just a matter of choice and style. Some investment managers like to control all aspects of the process. Others really like to tap into the expertise of local operating partners, and both are valid, legitimate ways of accessing the markets. And many investors don't have the capacity to be able to do direct joint ventures, but some are large enough to be able to do it, and they found that this is an effective way of reducing costs and getting good results. And so that's why they're pursuing those strategies.
How is your organization developing at this point? Like you were saying, it's only going into year three, so it's very young. How is your development process coming along?
Well, it's growing slowly. We're not in any rush to grow it. We want to make sure we have the right mix of members. If you look at the targeted membership, we're targeting 25 investor members. We have 24 investor members. And they include CalPERS, CalSTRS, Oregon, UC Regents, Utah, Texas Teachers, Rice University, UPS, and a whole handful of others. And then we have 17 investment managers currently signed up against a target of 25 investment managers. So the whole idea would be between investors and investment managers, we'd have 50 people seeking to form joint ventures. And then ideally, we'd like to have 100 real estate operating company members. Right now, we have 35. And then we are targeting up to 50 associate members, and we have 14. Associate members would be people that are service providers to these folks, so placement agents, software companies, data services companies, and people like that, outsourcing managed services companies that will do some of the fund management functions and administrative functions. Those sorts of people would fill out the associate membership. So what that ultimately would come down to is about 200 members is the initial targeted. Now, we'll probably, over a long period of time, double that number, but we won't triple or quadruple it. It's always going to be a small, intimate group of people. The whole idea about every program that we run is small is better. Our thesis is that, you know, you can go to a meeting of, you know, 1,000 people, but you're only going to be able to connect with so many. So why not make sure the people you're connecting with at these meetings are the right people? And you don't need 1,000. You need the right people that you're actually going to connect with at that meeting. So, for example, at the last meeting that occurred just a couple of weeks ago, we had 90 members represented at the meeting. And that's a nice mix of people. It gives you a chance to get to know everybody, as our former chairman, Emeritus Larry Hull, would say, get to know everybody on a first-name basis over the course of the 2 to 3 days of the meeting. And that's a nice thing to be able to do. And from what we've heard, it's working. You know, a lot of the members have, in fact, already formed partnerships with other members, and many are in the process of forming those partnerships now. So it's working, I think, exceptionally well. And at the meeting, what we, you know, euphemistically sometimes call our tick-to-dog ratio was 1 to 1.12, meaning for every capital partner, or every operating partner, there was 1.12 potential capital partners of the present at the meeting. So it was a really target-rich environment for the people that are seeking to form joint ventures and are looking for capital partners. And that's what we're intending to make it. We want it to be a target-rich environment for them.
So you bring together the parties that would do business together, and then during the course of the meeting, the content of that meeting, it also has to do with how real estate operating companies, what they need to know to form these partnerships and to make them work effectively. Is that correct, Jeff? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, the program is always geared towards connecting people and also having people develop a greater understanding of what's behind the black curtain on the other side of the table. So, you know, for investors, they need to understand how these partnerships are put together and what the issues and challenges that are facing real estate operating companies, and for the investment managers too. And then for the real estate operating companies, they need to understand how the decision-making process works on the other side of the table. So at this particular program, we kicked it off with our Board of Governors meeting. And the Board of Governors includes three different councils: the Investment Advisory Council, the Investment Manager Council, and the Real Estate Operating Council. The members of the Investment Advisory Council are CalPERS, CalSTRS, Colorado PREA, Jasper Ridge Partners, New Mexico Educational Retirement Board, Oregon State Treasury, Rice Management, Townsend Group, University of California Regents, UPS Group, and Utah Retirement System. And I should note the arm of the Townsend Group is the principal side of the business, not the consulting side of the business. And then on the Investment Manager Council, Almanac Realty Investors, Belay Investment Group, Bentall Kennedy, Crow Holding Capital Partners, Forum Partners, Invesco Real Estate, LaSalle Investment Management, Lionstone Investments, USA Real Estate, Walton Street Capital, Westport Capital. And then the Real Estate Operating Council Board of Governor members are MS Realty Advisors, First Washington Realty, Grosvenor Americas, IDS Real Estate Group, Lincoln Advisory Group, Moser Capital Management, Red Hill Realty, Skyline Pacific Properties, University Communities, Western National Group, and Westport Properties, U.S. Storage Centers. So how we kicked it off is the Board of Governors this year simply went through, each of the members went through and talked about their personal company profile, you know, the key statistics about their company, what they're trying to accomplish, what they're doing on the partnership side of their business. And then we follow that up with a town council meeting where the general membership can interact with the Board of Governors and ask questions or make comments or make suggestions. On day two, we started to get into a series of presentations. We talked about how you put a single one-off JV partnership together. So two of our members, one from the investment manager side and one from the operator side, kind of provided an overview or an analysis of how they actually put a specific apartment transaction together. So it helped people understand how they formed the relationship, what the key critical issues that were on both sides were for decision making and formation of the relationship, how they actually structured the deal. So they gave detailed information about how the deal was structured, and then how the deal is progressing. So that was kind of interesting. We also had a panel that talked about entity level investing and, you know, how that works. And because several of our members are investing with real estate operating companies at the entity level, where they're actually, you know, purchasing a piece of the company or investing in the securities of the company. And then we had a session on programmatic joint ventures, where different people talked about how they've gone about structuring programmatic joint ventures, where it's instead of doing a one-off deal, where they have a uniform set of documents and basically are working together to source real estate investment opportunities with the same operator over time. And then after each of these sessions, we also had roundtable discussions where the participants could get face-to-face with different members and discuss how they were approaching the same kind of issues. So if anybody had done entity investing, or if anybody had been involved in doing one-off deals, or if anybody had been involved in doing programmatic joint ventures. We also had a session on fund management, because some of these operators are slowly matriculating into the fund management business. And so what has been their experience, and what are the issues that they've had to face in making that happen, and what were some of the surprises that they learned along the way, and how long did it take them to actually raise their first and second and third funds, and those kinds of things. So it was a really interesting program. And we also had, because it was held in Park City next to the Olympic Training Center in Park City, we had a former Olympian come out and lead a kind of athletic social interaction networking session, where people learn some of the tricks of the trade of what the Olympic trainers use to improve their balance, improve their skills, and improve their execution. So there was a lot of fun involved in the event as well, as well as, you know, the typical breakfasts, lunches, dinners, and cocktail parties that go along with these kind of events, which, by the way, one of the things that's kind of a hallmark of our events is that at these events, we never have dinner or lunch speakers or breakfast speakers. Our whole idea is we don't want to detract from the ability of the members to talk to each other, because it's forming those relationships that is the real value add for all of these guys that are and ladies that are involved in these programs.
Well, it sounds like a great information exchange and a lot of big names that you rattled off there. So there's definitely some big players involved here. One final question on this before we move on to our next subject, and that is, were there any Not necessarily at this meeting, Jeff, but maybe even when you think back to the first one, were there any eureka moments, any epiphanies where the operating companies, the light bulb went on and they suddenly realized what it's going to take to work with the pension funds and other big players, and vice versa? Maybe the pension funds had a lack of understanding about what real estate operating companies were really all about and the benefits they could bring.
I can't speak for the members on that. That would be an interesting question to pose to the membership. But the feedback we've gotten from a lot of people that attended was that it was a phenomenal event, and they love the intimacy of it. They love the interactive nature of it. They love the no marketing policy, you know, that they can go and form relationships without necessarily having to pitch all the time. And most of them find that kind of an environment a heck of a lot easier to build relationships, because it's really changed the dynamic of the discussions. It's no longer I pitch and you resist. It's kind of we're all on the same side of the table trying to understand each other at a deeper level. And relationships form a lot faster when you're not introducing the dynamic of resistance, which is a normal dynamic when people are pitching and people are resisting being pitched.
Yeah, and everything you just said is really very much the hallmarks of all of our events, and including our upcoming event, VIP Infrastructure, which will be in Toronto. You know, as a backdrop to that, Jeff, when I, now you've been at this longer than I have, but I don't think there has been a time in my lifetime when infrastructure has been talked about so much and has been gathering so much momentum. We've got both political parties wanting to do big programs, but of course neither one of them wants, they're both committed to making sure the other party doesn't get any credit for it, so we're kind of stuck on that. But infrastructure is so much in the daily language, so with that again as a backdrop, what are you anticipating at the Toronto meeting?
Well, it'll be a typical institutional real estate Inc. program, even though it's not has nothing to do with real estate. You know, infrastructure is a quite different investment vehicle. A lot of situations with infrastructure investing, you're not investing in not all cases, but in many cases, you're not really investing in assets. You're investing in concessions, contracts to operate assets. The difference would be when you're buying operating companies, which is what a lot of the Canadian investors tend to do. But the whole idea is that economies work because there is all kinds of different infrastructure investments that are have been made, usually by governments, sometimes, you know, federal governments, sometimes, you know, state, and sometimes municipal governments. And those investments include things like roads and bridges and ports and airports and rail lines and energy transmission lines and energy power plants and water infrastructure and all those sorts of things. If you stop and think about it, society doesn't operate unless you have that infrastructure in place. And here in the United States, we're really behind the eight ball. If you go to China or you go to most of the developed Asian markets, the infrastructure, the investments that have been made make the infrastructure in those countries far superior to what we currently have here in the United States. There was a time when we were leading edge, but most of our infrastructure investments were made 50 or more years ago. And our infrastructure is crumbling and in need of massive repair and renovation and replacement, as well as new infrastructure that needs to be developed as new urban areas continue to be developed. So there's a real opportunity here in the United States, but the general atmosphere or climate, political climate, has been somewhat divisive. There's a need for tremendous education in the United States amongst the voting populace to understand that investments in infrastructure are just that. They're investments, not expenditures. And that we're not selling off our assets. We're trying to operate those assets more efficiently and channel capital to assets that otherwise are starved for capital right now. You know, the federal government deficit continues to grow. The federal debt continues to grow. The strain on our economy is huge. The ability to make the trillions of dollars investment infrastructure that are needed is somewhat limited. The states and municipalities, many of them are close to bankruptcy, and they just can't form the capital to invest in infrastructure the way in which they have in the past, which was largely done through the municipal bond market. So, you know, there's a real need for private capital in the market, and we need to find a way to educate the voting populace not to push back on this, because so many times projects will get underway and the voting populace will get aware of the fact that they're happening, and then they push back. They either don't want to pay the increased rates that will result from the investments that are made, or they fear that, you know, foreign ownership or even institutional ownership of the assets kind of goes against the principle of public good assets. And it really doesn't, but that's the concern that people have. Most people don't know much about their history. They don't realize that, you know, the U.S. railway network, which at one time was the greatest in the world, was financed largely through European capital. It wasn't financed by the American capital. So people just don't have a good sense of history and how these things fit. And they also don't recognize that there's a return on these investments. That, you know, when you make investments in infrastructure, it helps stimulate economic growth, which generates tax revenues that ultimately ends up helping to pay for the assets. So, again, there's a lot of education that needs to be done. So what is this program all about? It's called VIP Infrastructure. It used to be called Institutional Investing in Infrastructure. It's kind of the companion conference to our publication, Institutional Investing in Infrastructure, just like VIP Americas and VIP Europe are companions to the Institutional Real Estate Americas and Institutional Real Estate Europe publications. And it consists of investors who are interested in allocating capital to the asset class, and primarily investment managers who are interested in accessing that capital, who come together in a 2 to 3 day format to listen to speakers and to engage in roundtable discussions with each other. Again, putting everybody on the same side of the table and changing the dynamic of the and quality of the dialogue that occurs during these meetings.
Are there any new subjects that will be tackled in this particular meeting that is new vis-a-vis past meetings?
You know, I can tell you what the agenda is going to cover. We start out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on June 11th in Toronto with an investor-only and manager-only roundtable breakout sessions where we separate and people can really talk to each other about issues that are important to them. And then we come back together and afterwards and kind of cross-pollinate and share information. Then we break into a welcome cocktail reception. The next morning we get up for breakfast and we'll open up with a global perspective talking about some of the issues that our readers have indicated are important to them via our editorial advisory board meeting. And then we'll have a panelist from Campbell Lutens and from Partners Group kind of debrief on that and talk about the issues as they see them and how they're relating to the market. Then we'll get into a session on global capital flows, talking about how capital is flowing in the market, drawing on our fund tracker trends data. And again, Barry Blattman from Brookfield Asset Management and Brendan Woods from Macquarie Infrastructure Real Assets will kind of debrief on that topic. Then we get into a speed networking session where everybody's got a chance to kind of spend 1 to 2 minutes with everybody else in the room. That'll be followed by a panel on opportunities in communication infrastructure, you know, telecom and things of that nature, data centers, cell towers, fiber networks, things of that nature, which given the fact that we're moving into an information economy that's driven increasingly by internet-based resources is incredibly important because that's the infrastructure that forms the backbone of those networks. And then we'll have a session on a global outlook on renewables, you know, renewable versus traditional energy sources, solar, wind power, things of that nature. We'll have a session on ESG, finding the right environmental balance and some of the issues that are important to that market. Then we'll head into a program on the nature of infrastructure and is it a defensive asset class, and we'll answer some questions about that. Following that, we'll go into roundtable discussions where everybody in the group gets a chance to kind of discuss that topic in greater detail. They'll also have an opportunity to kind of interact with the panel members who originally framed the topic. Next day, on day two, we'll kick it off with a look at pricing and valuation models, looking at it from all the way from brownfield to greenfield developments. Following that, we'll have a session on managing the manager, best practices when it comes to implementing some of the strengths and dealing with some of the limitations of the ILPA guidelines governing, you know, manager best practice. And then we'll close with an investor advisory board wrap-up of the whole session, and then with some closing remarks. So it's going to be a really busy couple of days, and we're looking forward to meeting with everybody in Toronto.
And it will all be happening in a city that's got excellent infrastructure as far as I know. I remember the last time I was in Toronto, Jeff, there were construction cranes everywhere. Now, those were buildings, but my understanding is Toronto is a city with first-class infrastructure and serves as a nice example of what we're trying to achieve in cities across the United States and the world.
Yeah. Well, the Canadian market is much more oriented towards investing institutional capital in infrastructure investments. And so their infrastructure is a lot more modern and a lot more built out than the United States is right now.